This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
I prefer the term fashionably late, right? That's a good word for it, right?
Fashionably late. Now, fashionably, is, I think, is 5 minutes in the etiquette.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just redefining it, my friend. That's all. Just redefining it. Hello, everyone. You look lovely out there. We can see you now. We have we just got that new technology that allows us to peer into where you guys are at, and you look swell. Speaking of looking swell, let me show you this picture real quick that the Team Skeptic did. This is actual footage from Steve and I prior to the show. This is what goes on. This is the magic, so to speak. So it's such a good picture.
It's pretty accurate. I like the fact that look at that bulge I've got. That's impressive. Thank you, Team Skeptic.
That's sick. I hate that you went there. But anyway, thank you. You can pull away now.
That's impressive. Wow. He's changing the green screen.
Wow. That is pretty cool. We got fun with that.
He's got power.
Thank you, Team Skeptic, for that nice little surprise. It was fantastic. To Michael real quick. We've finally got Michael, and I hope he can still hear us. Are you still able to hear us, Michael?
I can hear you guys now. Yes. Yep.
Oh, perfect. Well, welcome. Welcome aboard. We just want to say hello to you real quick.
Thank you. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. I started watching it after I talked to you, and I like it.
Oh, we're sorry. We never mean for people to to get hooked and start watching. It's some things shouldn't be seen by like this weekend, which we'll get to that later. But let me run through some just very quickly what we've got coming up for the rest of this week. Tomorrow we will be talking to our founding liars. This particular individual thinks that autumn is a hoax. Why does he think autumn is a hoax? You'll have to tune in tomorrow to find out. But it is fantastic, so you don't want to miss that one. Wednesday we will have Astro Kirsten back with us to talk about meteors. She's been taking images of meteors in the solar system. She was one of our first early guests, and actually has the number the third most watched video on the channel when she talked to Debbie. Her and Debbie were quite the team. But she's coming back on Wednesday to go through her collection that she's been tracking with Meteor. So it should be really interesting. Steve's friend Drew Booth will be stopping by on Thursday. Steve, you've been going back and forth with Drew on Twitter for the past 3 days. The psychedelic guy.
Yeah, I haven't. No, I really haven't been going back and forth with him. I've just been inundated by his tweets, and I don't understand any of them. I didn't realize that he was very pro hallucinogenic. Explains a lot now.
Yeah, you couldn't tell.
But I still don't know. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't know, but if I come to find out clearly that he's on significant types of hallucinogenics, long term, it seems.
He's tripping, both figuratively and literally tripping. But he'll be with us on Thursday at 8 p.m. And then last two, this Friday, Destiny will actually be returning. He's coming back on the show, and he was going to be having a conversation with a really interesting story. This gentleman was a very strong atheist, and then several years back decided he wanted to become a pastor, and now is a Christian pastor. Destiny will be sitting down with him to have a conversation on religion. And then on Saturday, big day on Saturday, not only have Kyle and Jimmy, but Steve and Kyle are then going on the Drunken Peasants. I have to post the time of that. He hasn't told me what time they usually go, but
yeah,
so we have the Drunken Peasants on Saturday. And then Flatterday night with just a love. This is going to be fantastic. We have Fight the Flat Earth, and then we have Flat Earth Jesus.
But that's
we're just taking a second. Hello? We're taking a second to let that sink in. Start Googling if you want to, and you'll be happy that you did. So if you're watching, he said he's going to be watching. He was watching last night. So hello, Flat Earth Jesus. We look forward to having you on here, and can't wait. It's going to be fun. All right, Michael, we're here tonight to talk about gang stalking. I was newly introduced to this world. Right before I actually messaged you about coming on, do you kind of want to take a second to introduce yourself and then maybe explain a little bit what gang stalking entails, what it is?
Yeah. There's no 30-second explanation, but yeah, I'll do the best I can. So I'm Mike Barden. I was born and raised in California, Central California, and moved around the country a little bit. Let's see, what are the important things I should tell you? I was in the Air Force for 15 years, 5 years active duty. I was a crash fire rescue firefighter. I resigned from that job and opened an insurance agency, Farmers Insurance Agency, ran that for 5 years, got agent of the year and all that good stuff. And I stayed in the military, actually, in the Air National Guard, to do my 1 week in a month, and ended up being a journalist after I left the fire department. So I went to the Defense Information School at Fort Meade, Maryland, and got trained to be a multimedia illustrator. Came back and did that job, photo, video, and broadcast journalism for 10 years for the Air Force. And then after 9/11, I was out there working a lot more than just 1 week in a month. It was more like 2 to 4 months out of the year, different TDYs or like deployments and other end deployments, stuff like that. I'd say left California. Moved out to Oklahoma after I got out of the military. Left California, went out to Oklahoma for a couple of years near OU, and then moved here to Arizona, where I'm now in Avondale, Arizona. I can't just start the explanation of how I got targeted because I'm not even sure, and then go through that whole story. So. And I want to say this before we even start this conversation. Everybody listening, sure, what I say should question me, and they should think that this is ridiculous. But then after that, they should start researching some of the names that I'm going to tell you guys and look into the government programs and learn about how fiscal budgets work and why this would be something that that the government would do. And not just the government does this, large corporations and stuff like that. But so that's the first thing I want to say, because if somebody were to tell me before I realized what this was and did the amount of research I did, what I'm telling people now, I'd be to say the same thing. That's ridiculous. Who would spend so much time? Why are you so important? Who would do this to you? Yeah, because it's hard to really wrap your head around until you go through it. So that's just kind of what I wanted to start. Because this is a new. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's how we're gonna kind of approach it too, Michael. Like we're gonna be asking, I think we've got the live chat going too, so we might periodically, ask some questions that they might have. But we are approaching this with a skeptical. I believe I told you this when we first spoke that for me this is something that I have a hard time understanding and really without hearing your explanation and what you're gonna put forth tonight. Saying that it's something that's actually happening. So we are going to be approaching this from a very skeptical view. So I think it's good that you encourage people to look out for that.
Well, any real scientist is going to be objective. It's trying to figure out something, trying to diagnose something. You're going to stay objective. They're not going to hear something from somebody else and just say, all right, let's go with that. So, good for you guys, because a lot of people just, before researching any of this or listening to somebody's opinions or their observations of what's going on in their life, they don't know. They don't have anything to judge that on. So, sure. All right. So people that get targeted, it's not just a boilerplate rubber stamp kind of thing. Boom, you're targeted and you experience the exact same thing that everybody else does. There's multiple reasons for people to get targeted. One of the hardest ones for people to believe is that some people are targeted from birth. It's generational. Some people get targeted for being whistleblowers. Say they're a federal government employee with a secret clearance. They heard something, saw something, they're privy to information that the government thinks that they might put out that would harm the government. It's a government dissident. They can get put on a list. An ex, say somebody's going through a divorce and they want custody of the kids and they're going through this big court process. It's going to take a year or two. Well, if they have somebody harass that other person to the point that they look like they're going crazy, well, they're not going to look good in court, and then that other person gets custody of the kids. So that's something somebody with a lot of money would be able to do to afford to do something like that. But the number one way that I've figured out that this is happening is actually through Department of Homeland Security. So say somebody's got a problem with somebody else, and they understand how this system works, and they know that it only takes two people to report somebody to Department of Homeland Security for odd behavior, suspect behavior. Department of Homeland Security can start a case on that person and send it to the FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, and have that pushed through. And last year, I think there were 1,500 plus FISA court applications that I think maybe one or two were rejected. So they get through the FISA court, and then the next thing you know, sorry, go ahead.
Let me ask you real quick, Michael. What would constitute odd behavior?
Oh, the DHS website has like 70-something different listings on their website that would show who could possibly be a terrorist. And the kind of stuff that it shows, I mean, you can go right there to the website. I've posted this link several times that people can check it out, and it's ridiculous what they have on there. I mean, they've got people, if you want to make the world a better place in general, I mean, it literally says that on the website. People that are trying to make the world a better place in general. People that belong to organizations like Save the Whales and stuff like that. I should have had this link pulled up, but yeah, if you guys go to DHS and check that out, please do. There's a whole list of really odd things that are on there, and it looks like they made the list so they could basically pick out anyone that they decide to put their finger on. They say, you know what, this person's causing us some trouble. Let's go to our list and we can go ahead and pick anything out on here that we want. So to actually get put through the FISA court, the three criteria that that they look at. Does the person have communication with people outside of the country? Is the people a journalist? And are they a human rights activist? So those those kind of things right there will put you on through the FISA court.
Interesting.
And then, okay. I'm sorry.
Are you good? Go ahead.
Okay, okay. So once a person is processed through the FISA court, which there is no oversight, there's 11 judges. They're at, I believe it's 333 Constitution Way in Washington, D.C. Nobody goes in there, cipher locked doors, and everything is done in secret. A lot of what happens in the FISA court, Congress is not even aware of, the president is not aware of. It's so highly classified that nobody is aware of it other than the intel agencies that run these. And they call some of these programs USAPs, Unacknowledged Special Access Programs. And that's basically just a program that nobody knows about but a handful of people that run the compartmentalized groups. Mm-hmm. And then they run those groups through what are called fusion centers. So we've got fusion centers all over the United States. All of our data is collected by the NSA, and it's sent to Fort Meade, actually, where I've lived and trained. The NSA was across the street from the Defense Information School. So a lot of that data goes to Fort Meade. A lot of it goes to another place in Utah. The fusion centers process all of that data, and they use it to track American citizens, track and be able to know all of their information, every single phone call they make, every email, every single thing, and they can use that to manipulate that person. So the fusion centers, when they send that information, out, it goes to these compartmentalized groups, like InfraGuard is one. They're run by the FBI. Citizen Corps is FEMA. And then the Secret Surveillance Group, run by the FBI, actually trains citizen agents. They send them to Quantico, Virginia for 9 weeks. They train them to surveil American citizens on foot in public transportation and in vehicles. And then they send them back out in the public to perform this violation of our Fourth Amendment, because none of the people that are being tracked and surveilled have been given due process saying, we think you've committed a crime. We think you've done this. Go ahead.
Let me ask a question real quick. I just wanted to, James Freeman's in the live chat, and he does what's called First Amendment audits, and he goes, and I believe you and I talked about this briefly when we spoke on the phone, but you mentioned the fusion center. James, if you're still in the live chat, is that the same? I assume it's just one entity, right? They wouldn't be different fusion centers. So you're in for,
No, there's fusion centers everywhere. There's probably around 100 of them here in the United States. There are multiple fusion centers.
Okay. All right. And what do the fusion centers do with that information once they get it?
That's what is disseminated out to all of the compartmentalized organized groups like InfraGuard and and not just InfraGuard.
Got it. Okay.
Police, fire, and EMS have also become involved in this. And it sucks for me to even have to say that. You know, I was a firefighter. I've got a connection to these people. You know, I don't think all cops are bad. I don't think all these people are bad. But what's happened is these people to get federal funding, they have to take part in some of these programs. And I think I might have jumped off track. But anyway. They get federal funding to take part in these programs, and then they're issued what's called a national security letter, which says that they are operating under national security. What they're doing is top secret. And if they divulge any of the information of the program, they could be jailed for 10 years for divulging top secret information. So that's how they keep all these people that are involved in this, that are doing this. So say you work for the fire department. You've been there for 10 years, and they show up and they say, hey, we've got this new terrorist watch list program we need to be involved in, and we get federal funding. And if you rock the boat, then they're not going to tell you that. But if you go against it, it's going to keep that fire department from getting their federal funding, taking part in these programs. You're not going to be working there much longer. You know, it's like go along to get along. And I think that's where a lot of these public service folks are getting stuck in working in like what a Stasi police system, just like they had in World War II Germany. And, you know, I can explain how that got here too. So, but it is tough to stay on track with this. I just want to tell you that I'm going to kind of jump off track, go off on some tangents because there's so much information that it's impossible just to go, you know, linear from point A to point B. You got to jump all over the place. So,
well, let me ask let me acknowledge the elephant in the room before we go on. You've said several times that these are super secret and only certain amount of people know about this. How is that knowledge that either or that you've gotten from someone else?
By reverse engineering and talking to and building relationships with former intel agents that have worked for the NSA, that worked for the FBI. Like Karen Melton Stewart is a friend of mine. She worked for the NSA for 28 years. And a lot of us have, they don't send you a letter saying any of this stuff. We've had to reverse engineer a lot of it. And little bits and pieces come out. There's been lawsuits with some information in there. None of us can. Well, I shouldn't say none of us. There's a few lawsuits have been won. But right now, none of us can prove without beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is happening with government documents or anything like that, other than the ones that have been put out that say that there are patents for, like directed energy weapons, sonic weapons and stuff like that. There's proof that the patents are there, but there isn't proof that they're being used on people. And that's why this is such a perfect crime to commit, because there's so much plausible deniability. That's how this works. This whole program works on plausible deniability. And it basically, I'll just say this one thinking about it. Whoever thought of this program understood how the psychological system works and how the psychological evaluation works, because they built these skits and these instances that they will manufacture in your life to get you to report that, like say white and red cars are following me all through town. And then you go and you take the MMPI test, the Minneapolis Multiphasic Inventory, which tells you if you're a psychopath or an honest person or a good person. If you go in there and you say people are following me, even though if you have proof that the FBI secret surveillance groups takes part in surveilling people here in our country without a warrant, without due process, they still say that's impossible. You're delusional. So there's no way out of it. You could explain everything perfectly. What's going on, show evidence, and then you take this test and they go boom right there. And I think that's one of the motivations for this program, is to fill up prisons, to fill up mental institutions, to prescribe psychotropic and SSRI drugs, and to build those corporations. We have private prisons all over the United States. We have people that sit around a table and try to figure out ways to fill those up and to build profits, make their owners happy. So I really believe that this program has a lot to do with that, with business too.
Let's take a step back from the overall the general of what gang stalking is. Let's talk about you specifically. When did this start happening to you, and what's your theory as to why they are specifically targeting you? And then take us through like what a day would be like with Michael. Like what do you face on a daily basis?
Okay. Me specifically, and that's the $6 million question that a lot of targeted individuals would like to know, is like, okay, why me? Why is this going on? Why are these people taking so much effort? Why am I this important that this many people are going to be paying this much attention to me and doing all of this stuff? I don't get it. Like I said, targeting is generational in some instances. There's a former Air Force senior master sergeant named Kim Pertry. I sent you the video that he did, and him and I have almost identical stories. So I think people like him and I could possibly had been targeted from birth. And I know that is definitely hard for people to believe, but people sell their kids into child trafficking. So if you believe that child trafficking happens, you could believe that your parents could have connections to the government. They wanted to sell you for experimentation, you know, sign a contract, say it's for national security, something like that. So that's a possibility right there. But, you know, I'm still not 100% sure what really happened. And I had odd events that connected throughout my life from growing up. I had some issues at I don't know if I want to go into all that. I basically had some abuse happen when I was a kid at a daycare and a bunch of other odd events when I was a kid that didn't make sense at, when I became an adult. So, but when this really got weird for me, when things really, really changed, when I noticed the difference, towards the end of my Air Force career, I was still doing journalism, and this guy named Chuck DeCaro, he was a CNN news anchor for a long time. He was an Air Force test pilot before that, and like special forces, you know, paddle boarded into Grenada or something like that. You know, he was a badass guy. I think he might've even been CIA. I don't know. They don't tell you usually, but I went to this class that he taught, and it was for a program called Soft War. And there was two different things that we were working on, Soft War. And the other one was basically like some investigation through video research. People were, you know, blowing up our guys with IEDs over when we were deployed. And a lot of times they would make videos of that and then post that to take credit. And we would look at these videos and different things they were doing to try to see if we could brainstorm and figure out how to stop some of it and get information about that. So that was part of it. And then the other thing, Soft War, was basically using projecting media to the public to give them a false narrative of reality to the enemy. So they would use like commercials or something. They would, the CIA would, or I don't know who was doing it, this group would use, you know, propaganda basically to just give the enemy a false narrative. So I worked on that class. I worked with those guys for a little while, and then I ended up not making the team permanently. So right after that, I had had a good relationship with this girl 2 years. We never fought. You know, we had a good time. She was good to my kids. And I got home one day, and she's crying, and she's telling me she's got to leave. I'm thinking, hold up, what? You know, she made a millionaire? What's going on? What? And she took off, and that was the last I ever saw of her. And it was just really weird, you know. If I had done something, I thought I would think that. What's that?
She never told you why?
No. She said something about drinking is bad, and you know we didn't have issues with drinking, so I wasn't sure what that meant. And then all of a sudden, all these really hot women started showing up, and I was like, wow, well, okay, lucky me, I guess. You know, I was bummed out. I loved my girlfriend. I was, you know, with her for a couple of years. I lived with her, and she broke my heart. But then this stuff started happening. These women started showing up, and I'm like, wow, these girls are kind of out of my league. You know, I usually don't have a tough time with the women, but I don't know. This this doesn't usually happen. And then
Michael. Are you kind of hinting to the fact that you think that she may have been forced to leave?
Forced or coerced? Forced or coerced. And what one thing that they do in this program is use what's called a slander campaign, and it's a standard operating procedure. You see it in the media every day. What they will do is they will go to your immediate family and friends, somehow get somebody to tell them something terrible about you, and get them to just start thinking negatively about you. And they'll do the same thing in people's neighborhoods to build the slander campaign. You know, so many TIs will explain how, you know, they'll move into a neighborhood and everything's fine. And then all of a sudden they'll start getting dirty looks from all the neighbors. And they're like, what did I do? I have no idea. It was most likely the slander campaign. And it, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing around the United States, around the world, all the TI networks, you know, people that have never met each other in their life that aren't just getting on the internet, trying to research this stuff and then sound cool. They're looking up the symptoms that they're having, you know, the people following the home break-ins, the all of the weird stuff, you know, And that's how I found it. I started typing in what was happening to me, and this stuff popped up, and I thought, what is this? And then I heard Karen Melton Stewart, who worked for the, you know, like I said, worked for the NSA for 28 years, passed the psych eval all 28 years until she filed a lawsuit or an equal opportunity complaint with the NSA, and somebody with the right connection targeted her. So, and the reason, I'll just say this too while I'm thinking about it, the reason why a program like this would exist and stay in existence is because of annual fiscal budgets. So if you have a program that is stopping a threat, and you can show that that threat is a continuing threat, then you can keep your program going. But if your program works really well and you get rid of all the bad guys, then your program ends. So once it works well enough to get rid of all the bad guys, then what happens? They have to start farming bad guys, creating bad guys in order to grow that budget each year. I know I'm getting into way deep here real quick, but
there's a lot of,
I don't have any notes. I just kind of go.
That's okay. There's just a lot of let's take a break right here so that Steve and I can ask a couple questions that we have up until this point. And my I just have a really simple question. Around what age or what period in your life did you start to feel like you were being targeted in some way? Like, when did that sort of click with you that that's...
Well, I started realizing, I started noticing that people were being, in California actually, after I got out of the military, I started noticing that people were being really rude and driving really weird and just being shitty in general. And I thought, man, California is going to crap, man. It used to be so great here. And, I thought that's just what it was. And so I was like, okay, it's getting out of control. There's a lot of crime here. There's meth all over the Central Valley, meth
Steve's
labs
there.
Blowing up, gang fights, stuff like that. I said, okay, let's get out of here. Let's move to Norman, Oklahoma. Let's move out of the country, out of the state, and let's go take a road trip and find out where we want to go. So we ended up in Norman, Oklahoma, where my ex-wife actually had gone to school at OU. I thought, okay, we're getting out of here. People are going to be, it's going to be a lot slower. People will be more friendly. Things will be different. And I got there and I realized that a lot of the same stuff that was happening in California was happening in the exact same way in Oklahoma. And I started feeling like something was off, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it, you know? And so I was in Oklahoma for 2 years, and there's all kinds of stuff that went down between there, between that time, that showed me there was something weird going on. I moved from Oklahoma after 2 years here to Avondale, Arizona, and it started out pretty normal here. And I got settled in and got everything going, and then the same exact thing started up. So after my wife and I separated, she disappeared, actually, my ex-wife. I was with her for 9 years. And she disappeared. I took my daughter to the orthodontist appointment. She didn't say anything about anything. Got back from the orthodontist appointment. The Hyundai Veloster that we just bought not too long ago was gone. Her camera and like a little section of her clothes. And I'm just like, wow, that's odd. Because this wasn't something that happened, you know, repetitively. And then, long story short, she just disappeared. I called the police. The police wouldn't take a missing persons report. They said that she was an adult. She could leave if she wanted. And I was trying to explain them, look, I'm not calling you, telling you something that's just normal. This is like, we've been together for 9 years. It's never happened. She disappeared while I was gone. Somebody could have kidnapped her. They wouldn't help me. We started getting weird texts from her, texting my daughter, saying stuff like, don't worry, I'll never be back. And then that's when what these people that do this call the wave. They hit you with the wave, and that's when every aspect of the targeting came out. Every time I went into traffic, I was being, like big rigs were running red lights. I mean, I've got a bunch of this footage on my YouTube channel too. So right about that time is when I realized, okay, there's absolutely no way in hell that these instances that are happening are organic. Somebody is manipulating me. Somebody is harassing me, targeting me. This isn't just bad luck. And that's when I started researching. End of April, beginning of May 2017 is when I started researching what I had been going through and trying to figure out a way, to figure out what was going on, why it was going on, how I could stop it. And then the more I learned, I realized there's, hundreds of thousands of people everywhere. If not, and I hate to say, I think there possibly could be in the world around 3 million targeted individuals. And it's just a guesstimate from the research that I've done in the world. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not too big of a number if you think about the total population. So in the United States, we have 350 million people. So that'd be less than 1% of our population. So one person out of 99 could be targeted.
Let me ask you this.
And if I'm wrong, say there's a million, one out of 300 or so.
Mm-hmm. I just want to ask you about your wife real quick before we get too far away from it. Your ex-wife. Did you ever hear from her again?
I did, yeah, and it was really odd. She came back to get all of her stuff. I actually I packed up everything that she had that belonged to her, and it took like two U-Hauls to get out. And when she came back here, she didn't say much to me at all. She came over, she gave me a hug, and she whispered in my ear, "I'm sorry." And I was like, "Sorry for, just taking off or doing all this stuff." And then she started telling me about this dream that she had where her dad actually died in a car. This isn't a dream. This is a real. This part's real. Her dad died in a car accident on Christmas morning. But she was telling me she had a dream that her dad had actually didn't die in the car accident and that he had gone undercover for 10 years. And then she left.
Let me ask you this.
I don't know if that was her little way of letting me know she was undercover for 10 years or what the deal was.
You said something interesting. You said something interesting there that I want to ask you about. You said that you were packing up her stuff when she came, and then you had this interaction. Why were you packing her stuff up?
Because she had left. This was maybe almost a month after she had left, and I finally got to. Well, I talked to her on the phone before she came back over to get her stuff. I talked to her phone. Told me we were going to be getting a divorce. I kept asking her about all of these weird situations that happened. She wouldn't talk to me about any of those. She would just say odd stuff. So I wanted to get rid of the situation as professionally as I could and not cause any waves at all. She showed up with a cop, too, to the house, and there was no reason for that. I was calling the police trying to help get them to help find her. So she showed up with a cop. And, she had a reason to be afraid or something like that. And, I packed all of her stuff up exactly like I would have packed mine if I was going on a long, moving across country. I packed it up all nice, gave her stuff, and, decided that I don't need to figure out anymore right now. I need to let her go because I didn't know what targeting was at this moment in time. I had no idea. I just know that all of this weird stuff had happened. And when I keep saying weird stuff, in order for me to properly describe the events that happen, it would take, there's stuff that happens every single day. It would be a novel. It would be a multi-part novel. You'd ask me a question about...
Let me see if Steve has any questions real quick, Michael.
Okay.
Well, I was gonna touch back to the way back when. You've gone down quite a few different paths here. On the fusion centers that you're referring to now, correct me if I'm wrong. They were set up post 9/11, and they wanted to get an amalgamation of data from various sources, from Homeland Security, FBI, local, state, federal agencies, and disseminated them out from a centralized hub. Right? Is that the reason why they have the fusion centers? Correct.
Man, you just broke. I heard a part of what you just said. Can you please repeat what you said?
Sure. Basically, post 9/11, the fusion centers were set up to have a inter-system network between various interagencies, such as Homeland Security, FBI, local, state, so they can have a localized central place to aggregate the information and then disseminate it out in a faster time. Because during 9/11, there was a lot of miscommunications between different organizations leading to confusion. That's one of the reasons why they set up these fusion centers, correct?
That is one of the reasons they told the public, yes. Yeah, why they did that.
Okay.
So, and yes, it is. I mean, to disseminate information faster, because that's what they're doing, is they're getting mass amounts of information, and that's what they're disseminating for. Yes, so you're exactly right. But there's okay,
and
more
so,
that they do with them.
Now, you're claiming that these fusion hubs also now target the private citizen, right?
Correct. Yes, yes. Illegal domestic surveillance, organized stalking, and harassment.
In order to get certain wiretaps, as you noted, you have to go through FISA. You have to get a judge to sign off on a domestic wiretap like that, correct?
Correct, if they're doing it legally.
If they're doing it legally. Is that not public record?
No, I'm saying that some people that are targeted might be targeted by criminal organizations that aren't operating through the FISA court that understand this technology and everything, and that they mimic it.
No. Let me make sure. My question is for the intelligence gathering that's done through the fusion centers and local, state, federal organizations. When they do a wiretap, that does become public information at some point, doesn't it? I may be wrong on that. Honestly, I do not
court.
Know.
No,
I thought it was public at some point.
No, nothing that goes through the FISA court is public record at all. Not even the president or Congress can see information in the FISA court unredacted.
So you can't even do a FOIA request for that information.
Every person I know that's done a FOIA, the only FOIA request ever granted was on Carter Page recently. And none of us have even seen that unredacted yet.
Yeah, I don't think they have an obligation to keep them unredacted. Is that right? They can redact certain things if it's considered to be national security issues.
Yeah, that's how they'll keep, you know, a lot of the information in there that is unconstitutional and illegal. They just say that it's a matter of national security and they have to redact it, and that way they just black out everything that anybody could say. Well, look at right there, you're violating our constitutional rights. You know, well, I'm sorry, that's national security. So everybody just has that natural, you know, fear, like, oh gosh, national security, we better listen to that, you know. But there's things that these people, and I'm not anti-government. I just think that the government's been infiltrated by a lot of these people that abuse classified programs and classified information to hide illegal things. And this is one of the instances that is happening.
And what would be the main two goals for this? One, it has to be very cost ineffective. If you have round-the-clock surveillance, if you have all these different things. I mean, it sounds
that's the point. Money is the point. The money is the point, because see, it's not how much it costs. It's how many government contracts can be made by this, and to grow those government contracts. So the CIA, their number one job is to protect American financial institutions. So why wouldn't they try to grow some of these quote businesses that are under classified programs and grow those businesses? So they look at it that way instead of, hey, we're spending all this money on that. They're saying, hey, we're growing all of these businesses. This is costing billions and billions of dollars. We're getting billions of tax dollars. And that's
like prisons,
you know, just working
right?
for the government. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like private prison? You mean like private prisons?
Yes,
and those sort of things?
Exactly. Exactly. It's the exact same concept. And that's part of, like, you know, what I said a little bit earlier too. I think that's part of what this is, to grow the private prisons, to grow the mental institutions, to sell drugs for big pharma. You know, because if you can...
Now, how are they doing
you
that?
Can... I'm sorry?
Like by you know, following you and several other people around and watching what they do in their, you know, in their daily lives, and, you know, their presence is felt. If they're not actively engaging you, how are they creating, you know, business for these companies if all they're doing is following you guys and, you know, just tailing you?
There's way more to it than just following people around. That's a very, very small part of it. So there's different things that happen in targeted individuals' life, and it varies on the person too. But there's, like I said, there are home break-ins. Like, you'll go to the store for, hey, you'll be gone for half an hour. You'll come home. Here's just, I'll just give examples that have personally happened to me. I'll leave the house. Nobody's here. Come home. And a lamp that I had in my living room is sitting in the middle of my studio where I do my eBay stuff. And I know 100% for sure that I wouldn't pick up the lamp and just go set it in the studio. Nobody else was home. You know, so that makes you think right there, oh my God, somebody is in my house. And it's called gaslighting, because you stop and think like, nobody'd be in my house. Why would that be over there? Did I put that there? And then you start to question yourself. Gaslighting is a big part of this. And it can be as simple as, there's actually a movie made in 1944 called Gaslight. If you want to check that movie out, it shows how somebody gaslights somebody. And I've lived through this with multiple people where they gaslight you. Personality would go ahead.
With the lamp, just taking that example, could it be that maybe you just moved it and forgot? Like I'm trying to think of what would be absolutely zero reason
for me to pick up my lamp in the corner of the room where it sits and put it in the middle of my studio. And there'd also be different things too. Like, okay, I was watching some Stolen Valor videos, and now they monitor everything, all of your electronics, and we know this. The NSA can do this, so monitor all of your electronics, all of your phone calls, all of your emails, everything. So they know what you're saying in your home at all times. And I was looking up some Stolen Valor videos. You know, these guys dress up and go to the airport in their military uniform trying to get a first-class ticket, and they don't even know what rank they are or where they went to school because they were never in the military. So I was watching some of those. And these people will break into your house in the middle of the night, too. So I wake up in the morning, I go down to get my laundry, and there's a shoelace sticking out of my dryer, and the little eyelet on the end of it says Valor. So they'll do things like this, ridiculous things that nobody would believe if it didn't happen to them, to get you to explain this. So because if I was listening to me right now and this had never happened to me, I would be questioning this too. Why would somebody monitor what videos you're watching and then break into your house to put a shoelace in your dryer that says Valor? But it's to make you feel uncomfortable. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, and that's my ultimate question, Michael. When they're breaking in and they're moving your lamp to a specific spot in the floor, knowing that you're going to notice that, or put the shoelace in the dryer, what's their ultimate end game? Like, by making you feel uncomfortable, what are they hoping that you do? Like, what are they expecting you? How are they expecting you to react? What are they wanting from you?
To call the police department and tell the police that that my furniture is moving around magically by itself. And then they can say, are you taking medication? And I say, no. And they say, ooh, you should probably see a psychologist or a psychiatrist about this.
And what happens if you
say, no.
What happens if you don't involve the police? If you don't tell them about any of these things, you just pretend like none of this ever even happens. What would be the advantage for them then if you don't get on medication? And again, I'm looking at the cost effectiveness for them to get you on medication. I'm guaranteeing they're spending far more to pay people to do all this, to have this psychological warfare, than it would take. They're going to get back from you just, you know, being on Prozac or something, or whatever they put somebody on. I don't know.
Yeah, that's where we go back to the government contracts, the private government contracts, where it grows these private compartmentalized groups that bid for government contracts. So it's not about how much money it costs. They're trying to build what they call businesses with
it. If you don't feed into it, they're not going to get any returns on their investment. If you don't contact anybody, you completely ignore them, it's like they don't exist. You just basically ghost.
Okay, well, when you completely ignore it, and I've tried that. I've tried to completely ignore it. It doesn't stop. It persists. I can keep going on and on and on. In my business, I have the eBay store. We've got like 16,000 items in the store. I ship out 500 to 700 items a month, and I will constantly get harassed through my emails in eBay, through customer purchases. They'll have different names.
I was in retail. We get that. You get all the time. Yeah, that's. I got to tell you that's kind of a normal course of having a business. A lot of times, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. It is very normal, but it's more than before because I've been doing eBay for a long time, so it's a definite difference. So, and like I said, there's plausible deniability in this. Like, well, yeah, people are assholes on eBay. You know, they're jerks. They try to get over on you and stuff like that. But it's not just having a tough time with a customer. They will say certain things, use certain keywords. If I have a conversation in my home, private conversation, I'll get on eBay, I'll be going through my items, and one of the messages that I'll get will have like a little phrase that I just said. And now I believe in coincidences. I believe that happens. It does happen. But the timing and the repetition of this kind of the thing that's happening shows me that there's somebody that is doing this.
Yeah, and there's definitely things like serendipity and synchronicity. But let me give you an example. I'll give what you just talked about something that you said. You mentioned something where people had overheard, or you think they may have overheard. But like the other day, I was talking to a friend, and while we were communicating, I was looking through my Twitter timeline and I saw a picture of a Talon Eagle, and I thought it was really cool, and I wanted to go Google it. So I searched it, and as soon as I searched, you know, Eagle, right? My friend was talking about the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, yeah.
It's exact same time.
That happened.
Same word as soon as I searched for it. I mean, wasn't even like a half a second later.
It does happen.
Like, search, boom. There's a lot of coincidences that do happen. I don't think he was listening. I don't think he was watching my screen or think he had any kind of way of surveilling.
You shouldn't think that.
At least I hope
until it until it happens. Yeah, you should not think that when that happens sporadically in a normal way, but when it happens consistently throughout your entire day, then a pattern is starting to occur, and then you start to notice it. So yeah, you're right on. You know, that does happen. You think about somebody and they call you. You're like, well, hey, I was just thinking about you. You know, you called me. Cool. I don't think that they were, you know, reading my mind and said I'm going to call them to freak them out. I believe that happens. That does happen.
Do they know that how are they? If you're, let me ask this. If you're knowingly, if you know that they're targeting you, right? You're coming on to this show to actively talk about what they're doing. You're essentially putting it out there that you know they're there, and I think we can all agree that if that's the case, they're going to hear what you're saying tonight. How is that going to either affect what you've got going on now, or you know, will you get repercussions for that? How does that work?
Every time I load a new video, if I load new evidence of you know, I put together like a 5-part video that I did with that I narrated, I put that out, and the next day was hell driving through traffic. I almost got like 5 car wrecks. People are swerving at me, people honking. Roll down their window and flip you off. People you've never seen in your life, you know, going into the store, people, and they always get on their cell phone. It's like they get up when you get into an area. So they have some kind of tracker somehow. A lot of people believe that it's RFID chips that are implanted through elective surgeries or, you know, different ways. But they know where you are. Going to the grocery store, they pick up their phone, they look at their phone. They look at whatever's on their phone. They look around until they make until they see me, and then they start doing whatever their little skit is. You know, it's not like somebody just happens to bump into me in the grocery store. They all do the same thing. It's like a standard operating procedure. And it wouldn't be that hard to locate somebody, especially I carry my smartphone with me all the time. You know, got Facebook, Twitter, all these different things. I'm sure we signed somewhere. And one of those agreements without knowing that, you know, it says something like, we can track you at all times and blah, 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 this or that. And then just takes the app and, you know, they can go through their thing. And I didn't design this program. I'm just witnessing it. So I'm doing the best I can to describe it, what I go through. And
how many people would you say are tailing you a day? Like, how many, if you had to guess, how many agents or, you know, whatever you refer to them as, are trailing you a day?
It's hard to say. I don't know. Have you checked out any of the videos of the traffic stuff that I put up?
I have, but it's and actually I wrote down that was one of my main questions is because I can't get a definite count. It seems like they're in some of the videos they either you think that they're switching people, or you know, it'll start off as one particular.
Yeah, and then definitely. They do use multiple people. I'll try to give you. Let's see. I'll try to. I can't come up with a number how many are, you know, because I have different days, different situations, scenarios, different places I go. So it's hard to come up with a
just a ballpark
a number per day. I don't know. Average. I'm not going to guess. It's there's a lot of people that are involved in this.
More than four.
I'll give you a standard. I'm sorry. What did you say? More than four.
More than four.
Oh yeah. Easily. I'll go out my front door. I'll just say a standard day. I'll pull out of the driveway. There will be a car that I've never seen in my neighborhood. You know, you've lived in the neighborhood for a while. You start knowing your neighbors, who's around the neighborhood and stuff like that. And I live at the very back of a neighborhood where you can't drive through to get to the other side of the road or anything like that. And so I'll go out. And there will be a car with their headlights facing my house, and they'll just be sitting there on their phone. And people stop and pull over for directions and get on their phone and check whatever. But this is something that would happen every single day. Go out, somebody sitting there on their phone. I'd go up to ask them if they needed directions. As I'm walking up to the car, they'd take off. As I'm going down the driveway, the street out to the neighborhood. I mean, out of the neighborhood. Three or four garage doors will open up, and all these cars will back out at the exact same time. And again, that's something that happens in everyday normal life. But when it happens at like 20th day in a row, you know, then I'll get out to and I'll get out to the main road. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I want to go back to just real briefly a point that Steve made earlier, and because it's one that I think it's the biggest to me anyway. It's the biggest question throughout all of this. All throughout the day you have these events happening, the cars backing out at the same time, you know, them being synchronized, them having to be in strategic locations at different points throughout the day, based on knowing where you're going to go. At what point does that become so grossly expensive versus what they're getting out of you? Like, what are you providing them where it's worth it to continue to persist with trailing you like this? Because this is that's an elaborate what you're describing is an,
I don't know
is
the
an
answer
elaborate
to that. I can't give you the answer to that. I really don't know. I know that there are objectives in this program, but I don't know. I don't know. I guess I keep explaining this part. They are growing business. They are making money. I don't know if have any of you ever worked for the government and worked on fiscal year projects. I'll give you an example.
I've worked in for the government. Shop. I mean, I was.
Okay. Sorry. In our shop, when I was in the Air Force, we had a lot of multimedia equipment, really expensive video cameras, DSLRs, you know, all kinds of stuff. We got to the end of the year and we hadn't spent enough money. So, and this happened every fucking year. And they'd say, hey, we need to spend $30,000. We need to spend $60,000 just in this shop, one shop. So we had to find things to purchase that we didn't really need. We didn't have a need for it. We might need this down the road. This would be cool to have, but we had to spend that money in order to get that money the next year. And they wanted to grow the budget each year. They want to get as much money as possible for that particular shop.
There are some reasons for that, though. I mean, there are reasons why they have you spend up to that limited budget to you, because if they feel, especially when you're doing things like preventative maintenance, right, and you have to buy certain purchase orders and certain things like O-rings and gaskets and things of that nature, right? So they're feeling the idea behind that is if you don't spend enough, then you're not properly doing the maintenance that you're supposed to do, or you're not taking care of the shop as well as you should be if you are $30,000 under budget. That's the reason.
I understand that. But then when they do it every single year and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger every single year, you notice that it's not just to make sure we have enough stuff. It's to grow that shop, grow that entity, grow it. And that's why I think that they why this program is growing. Government contracts are the you know, best contracts to get the most money.
It's the numbers, the numbers thing, I think is the biggest crux of it, because you said you believe that if you took 1% of the population, which would be a million, what was the number you said? At least a million people that may be
3 million.
My guesstimate was 1 million to 3 million in the world.
Sure.
It possibly costs. So the guy was talking about, former Senior Master Sergeant Ken Peartree, who also is a targeted individual. And he sent the video of him to you. And he actually came up with a cost analysis sheet of if these people had government jobs, they were GS positions, government salary, the different positions, all of the jobs basically that would be available as a surveillance agent / gang stalker, and came up with it for 1 to 2 targeted individuals a year, it'd be about $3.5 million a year to target 1 to 2 people if they're in the same area.
Well, you got to think about this too, though. Yeah. To Michael, you said in your daily, you know, your daily commute or whatever you do during the day, that there's at least more than 4. That's why I wanted to kind of ask that question. So there was at least more than 4 that were tailing you. So if you apply that same standard,
thought of the answer of what you guys are asking me, and I'm sorry to cut you off. But I just thought of the answer because I wasn't
sure.
Absorbing it all, I guess. They're not all out just following people around. These are normal citizens. Well, I don't call them normal, but these are citizens on patrol, basically. So these people are out living their daily life, and they're going to do their normal things. Some of them, I believe, sit in like parking lots, and they wait. They do like a zone defense in like football. If somebody comes into their area, the app goes off, and that's they're working in that area for like 8 hours, and then they just go harass whoever. But these people, like when you're driving around, some of the vehicles, I do believe, specifically go to where you are. Some of them, I believe, they're just driving through town and they get a note on their app. Hey, there's somebody coming up. And then the picture pops up, what the vehicle looks like, what the person looks like. And then they can do whatever they're doing on the way to where they're going, on their at work. I mean, this happens a lot in places of business to a lot of target individuals, where you'll go in and the person at FedEx is completely friendly to everybody else, and then they gaslight the shit out of you while you're in there, and they, you know, tell you did something wrong that they're supposed to do, and then they get mad at you for it. I just took a good video of that not too long ago. And amazingly, the package that I dropped off that day hasn't been checked in yet. You know.
Steve, in the live chat, there was an important question that I think should be asked. Do you want to ask that question that Dr. put in?
Yeah, because I was thinking this was actually a question I was going to ask, because I was thinking the same thing. You know, like, for example, and by the way, thank you very much for coming on. We do appreciate it immensely, and I mean that very sincerely. But how do you know, like, Kyle and I are not part of the conspiracy?
How do I know that what?
How do you know Kyle and I are not part of the conspiracy, and that we're not paid to keep tabs on you, and this is some kind of
I don't know that
magnanimous
and,
plan.
You just have to walk with blind trust sometimes. And so I just put my trust in you guys. And I figured you might even throw me some hardball questions that I have to answer. And I'm fine with that. But I don't think you guys are government agents or anything like that. I think you guys are a guy.
Kyle has machinations like you wouldn't believe. He could come up with some pretty creative stuff if he wanted to. So
I would never make it as an agent. Yeah. I'm a softie. I'd be like, I don't want to follow him. He seems like he's doing his own thing. I don't want to do it.
Seems like a nice guy. Yeah.
Here's
what I do with these people that harass me now. It's hard to tell if they are a perp. That's their nickname we've given them to them. They're perpetrators of this crime. I don't know if they're a perp or just somebody out doing their everyday thing. And I just talk to pretty much everybody I come into contact with. And I don't put up a wall before I start talking to them. I just start off my conversation normally, like I would with any other person. And that's what they want you to do. They want you to become isolated and not talk to anybody and just become disgruntled. And you know, I refuse. I talk to everybody, and I end up I'll start a conversation with somebody, and then they'll start doing a direct conversation or gaslighting me. And then I just go, okay, well, this person was, you know, they're a gang stalker. But then if I keep doing that, I run into great people. I've met some new friends around here that aren't involved in this. You know, I go out to garage sales all the time and go to the swap meet and run around town, go to just go to different places. And I just talk to everybody. And, you know, so I don't think that everybody's involved in this. And that's what they want you to think is like, the whole world is after me. You know, everybody is in on this. And, you know, I know they're not. I talk to some people. And so I just try to keep good attitude, you know, and not think about that too much and just be vigilant and move on with my day the best I can. It is tough. It is tough when you make it out, go out through the whole day and you just, you know, you don't try to hide from these people. And then, you know, you talk to 20 different people, 10 of them fuck with you. So you're a little frustrated when you get home at the end of the day, but it's just kind of the price I have to pay to keep talking to people and have normal conversations, normal interactions with people. I just have to weed through the perps.
We're getting up to we're getting around to the mark on the hour. We got about 10 minutes left. Can you tell me what the end game is? Like, where do you see this going? Where is the line for you? How, you know, are you gonna put up with this for the rest of your life? Do you have a plan?
No. I'm just gonna keep fighting it until it stops. When this stops, I stop. I have other things in my life that I'd rather be doing. I do not want to be famous. If I did, it would be I would like to be famous as a photographer, you know, traveling band photographer, something like that, or a skateboard videographer, you know, something like that, something fun. This is really monotonous. It's a lot of research. It's not fun. Nobody wants to listen to what you say. You get called crazy a lot, and I would rather not be doing this. I do it because I have to. So when this stops, when this program is ended, then I will stop. And it's ended before, you know, because this what we're going through, it really does mimic exactly what happened in World War II Germany, the Stasi police, that Hitler ran, and eventually they had the Nuremberg trials, and all of those Stasi police that were slandering, stalking, and harassing all of the private citizens that were government dissidents or I don't think they had the word whistleblowers back then. All of those files that they created on all of those citizens were open so the public could see them, so they could see what they did to those people. And I'm just hoping that happens again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm just a little envious that nobody cares enough to even want to surveil my life or,
yeah, me too.
Or tail me. Or I'm a little bummed out that I'm just that boring that nobody gives a shit to have some kind of centralized hub. Send out agents to go.
Be careful what you wish for, man. Yeah, it's not.
Well,
yeah, I really wish that all of this attention, you know, wasn't.
They would be bored out of their minds.
On my direction,
they would be very. They'd be very disappointed.
Now,
I assure you.
Let me ask a question that's kind of personal a little bit, but you have a couple videos out there with your son. Is he? Is he getting targeted as well? Like, is this something that's affecting him too, or are they just for the most part leaving him alone?
Well, his mom actually died on my birthday. Really odd timing. Another one of those odd timing things. But yeah, this has definitely affected him. One, he has to hear me going through this and see me going through all this stuff, and he does notice some of the stuff. But he, I try not to talk with him about it too much because we're trying to just have as normal of a life as we can without all of this nonsense. You know, I'm a single dad. I've got my kid. My son's 22. My daughter's 16. You know, we basically run this place by ourselves, no outside help from parents or anything. And I try to keep it as low key as possible, but we've had some issues when I first started going through this. You know, he was, I didn't have all the information to give him, and I didn't have the contacts that I've had, you know. So when I do interviews with a former CIA agent like Kevin Shipp, and I'm on Crowdsource the Truth, where former NSA technical director Bill Binney was just on yesterday, I believe. You know, I'm on the show with these people that have insight into these programs, and they're telling me, yes, you're right, keep moving forward with what you're doing. You know, it's a little easier to explain because, So, my daughter notices this stuff, but I just try not to get them involved too much. You know, this is an adult thing. I'd rather them grow up normally. And
sure.
Of course, somebody's calling me right now. No caller ID.
What about your like adult friends that you have, or you know, other family members like brothers, sisters? How are they kind of handling this situation?
I don't really have any. I don't have any brothers, sisters. I have some family members, but I've completely lost contact with the family members. Before I realized I was targeted, they just slowly started not responding to me anymore. And it wasn't like we had any kind of fight, any falling out, anything like that. It's got tougher and tougher to communicate with these people. But there are probably reasons for that. Also, I had a lot of family, you know, when I grew up near Edwards Air Force Base, and most of my family was either in the government, high security clearances. Some of them worked out at Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. I don't know if any of you guys have done any research. There's been a lot of complaints about Lockheed Martin, kids that were trafficked, pedophile films, snuff films being done out there at Skunk Works behind closed doors. And I grew up in that area with family members that worked in those areas. So I'll just kind of go with that. And as I started asking more and more questions to a lot of these family members about schools I went to and different situations that happened when I was a kid that didn't make sense, they didn't seem like they wanted to be very helpful. So I think that's all I really want to say about that part.
Sure. That's totally understandable. Well, Steve's going to read some super chats from the live chat, and then we'll give you the last word, or you can wrap up any last minute thoughts that you have, anything that you want to say before we close out. So, Steve.
Okay. I just want to give some of the listeners some names to research and that before I go. So go ahead.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. We only have a few super chats. I just have a quick public service announcement. I just got an email and I did validate it. There's been a Quora hack. Hundreds of millions of accounts have been compromised. If you use a password for Quora, they're recommending changing that and across platforms. So it's a huge security breach. If you happen to be on Quora, they've just announced it. So people might want to take a gander at that, especially if you're one of those people that answer questions a lot on Quora. Okay.
Here's my next Quora question. So, why your security so lack?
Well, you know, it's kind of perfect that we mentioned this at this particular time, because maybe this hack had to do something with our guest. I don't know. Michael, are you on Quora at all?
I'm not. I don't know what that is. What is it?
Okay. Oh, Quora is where experts kind of get together and laypersons, and they people ask questions and then they vote on the best answer kind of thing.
You can ask any question.
I have to check it out. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Quora's pretty cool. Most of the time they get
don't do it now. This is not a good time. This is not a good time.
No, I'll wait. Let
them fix this. This is not a good time for you.
Yeah,
let me fix
this. Yeah, not a good time to put in personal information.
In my case, it doesn't matter. Everything is hackable. Everything is, my mouse will move around by itself. And words will fill in. So I don't even worry about that too much. I just figure, let them see it. I don't have anything to hide right now. As much as I complain about our Fourth Amendment being violated, I just got used to it almost and screw it. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
All right, no problem. Let me knock this out real quick. Vandy, 004, $5. Good evening, fellow basement dweller, neck-bearded, philosophical agnostics.
How
good
rude.
Day to you too. Or evening. He's excluding all the rest of you. So, and by the way, I don't have a neck beard. At all. I shaved all this. Annabelle P. Hey, Annabelle. Long time. Hope you're doing well. 5 pounds. Thank you, Annabelle. She says, what does Michael do for a living and why is he so important to stalkers? Great question, Michael. I mean,
do you want me to answer that?
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Okay, please.
I'm sorry. I broke up. Sorry. What I do for a living currently is I own an online store, eBay store called Hats Around the World. We have vintage, antique, some antique, and collectible items in it. We've got over 16,000 items in it. I ship out 500 to 700 items a month, and I keep pretty busy doing that because I have to go out and find all this stuff.
before I sell it. Find it, bring it home, clean it, research it, photograph it, organize it. Do all kinds of stuff. That's what we do. My son and I run that business together. And I've been doing that for like seven years now.
Yeah, it sounds like a great business. What would be the government's interest in that other than what you've already said? I mean, is there anything specific to your business that they would find a more interest in anything else?
Not necessarily in this business other than the contact with people I have all over the world. I ship items literally all over the world. I can't think of a country I haven't shipped to. I don't think my current job has anything to do with my targeting. My former job, when I was in the Air Force, I had a secret clearance. I mean, I lived at Fort Meade. My dad worked at Plant 42, where they did research and development for projects that were test flown at Area 51. You know, my mom was the head of personnel for the FAA during the Ronald Reagan administration. She would take me out to her office during the strike. She had to fire 200 and something air traffic controllers, and I was out there at 6 years old running around the facility. The air traffic controllers are letting me into the air traffic control room and sit down at their monitors and look at these planes flying over and all this restricted airspace when I was a little kid. They used that facility actually in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. My mom's boss was in that movie, Ed. It goes on and on and on with the military background, private contractor kind of history in my family. And they could be... You know, one of the things that happened, actually, and this is kind of maybe off subject, but one of the things that happened is, you know, I didn't ever have a good relationship with my dad. I tried to spend time with him a lot growing up. And we started building a relationship as my kids were growing up. And then I called him. I'm starting to get some feedback, but I'm going to keep talking. I called him one day, and we had gotten an argument about something. Oh, I was going to drive. I drove to his house, and he said, "If my wife, or my wife says, if anybody comes in this house, she's going to shoot me in the head." And I meet him at a restaurant, and then I went back home, and then I left him a message on his answering machine that said something like, "All I ever wanted you to do was teach me, you know, something growing up." And he said, "Okay, fine, I'll teach you something." And I was on my going to be going back out to visit him again. And then I got a phone call after I got home from drill one day that he had shot himself in the head. Impeccable timing, you know. Yeah, he was a crash fire rescue firefighter out there at Plant 42 with all these secret shit, and took me out there too when I was a kid. So, you know, there's so many different reasons it could have been something like that. And my parents passed on information to me that I wasn't supposed to know about these secret stuff, or it could have been my secret clearance in places I was. I was in the United Arab Emirates, up off of Air Force Base over there. We had a tower called the Voice of God. Go ahead, people should look up the Voice of God. There's a lot of different things, and I'm not completely sure of why they are doing this, but I would really like to know.
Yeah. I've been
the
over
Voice of God is Beyonce, by the way.
You what?
But yeah, you dated
the Voice of God. Voice of God is Beyonce.
Is Beyonce.
You kind of dated yourself because I remember the deregulation. I was 8 years old, I think, back when Reagan deregulated the airport. That was a huge cluster. Anyways, let's get through this real quick. Hero 0-1-3-2-1-3-2-6-1-6. I think he meant 1-6-6-6, but thanks, buddy. He says, "Hundreds of people stare at you guys through screens for 2 hours a day. You are being followed." Yeah, it's more than 2 hours a day. We have other things, but yeah, we... On all our platforms, we are followed, but we tell people don't, and so you guys are stalkers. Okay, so.
Yep.
a kid knew $5. Sorry this happened to you, Mike. Hope things get better soon. A kid knew. I say kid knew. You say Inkadoo. I don't know what it's supposed Inkadoo. To be. Is it Inkadoo?
Hey, is it really Inkadoo? Is James Freeman the next one?
Okay. Yes, you want to do that one?
Let me do it. No, you can read it, but I just want to do it. Hey, everybody, it's James Freeman.
James Freeman, $10, says, "I've been stalked ever since I was abducted by aliens." So difficult. And James, we will get a hold of you. We definitely want you on. I have so many questions to ask you. You have no idea. Also, News Now Houston said he would be very happy to come on. And I know Black Label Cop Watch is more than willing to come back on. So we definitely have a lot to talk about because I have so many questions for you guys. And I binge watched the shit out of their stuff.
The first question, of course, is, am I being detained or am I free to go?
That's what James is going to be asking the first thing. Am I being detained coming on your show or am I free to go?
Oh, it's Inky-Doo. Inky-Doo. That's the correct. Yep.
Inky-Doo. Okay. Well, we'd be butchering all this one? Time. Yes, sir.
All right, Michael, we're going to let you have the last major word here. You can wrap up any thoughts. Also let people know where they can go to. I know you got a channel. I'll link it in the description as well. And if people want to follow your story along and plug whatever you want and say whatever you want.
Okay. I appreciate it. Hey man, I just wanted to tell you too, by the way, you're looking sharp and I think I'm going to borrow that color scheme there, the gray jacket with the orange shirt. I got YouTube up finally.
It's a nice contrast. I put my red on shirt just because he had her shirt on, so I kind of changed just before the show because I wanted to match a little bit. Because I liked it as well. Right on.
I think the thing that that I'd like to do is put some names out there for people to research, because I'm not the most well-spoken. I'm not the smartest guy in this whole thing. I'm just a guy that got caught up in this and has researched my ass off trying to figure out how to end it so I can get my life back. So some good people to look up would be Dr. John Hall. He's a doctor out of San Antonio, Texas. He actually helped a targeted individual catch the people that were doing it. He's written a book called Guinea Pigs. Dr. Robert Duncan worked for the CIA. He went to Harvard. He developed a lot of this technology. And I didn't even really talk about the technology that's used on targeted individuals, because that kind of goes off into even more hard to believe. But this guy actually is one of the people that developed a lot of the technology, synthetic telepathy and voice to skull, and a lot of the different shocks and stuff that targeted individuals receive. And then he came out and it said what he did. And he describes in detail how he made all this stuff. It would be good. Karen Melton Stewart, like I said, worked for the NSA for 28 years. She's real reputable. There's a talk show called Ella Free, ELLAFREE. I've been on that show. There's a lot of reputable people that have worked in government and doctors, different things like that, that explain their targeting experiences. Let's see. Gerald Sosby, he's a former FBI agent. He's a Texas currently. He's an attorney in Texas currently. Him and Karen actually both wrote me letters to the judge. I didn't go over that part either. So that's enough for people to look up right there. And I'll maybe end on this note. 3 weeks after I interviewed one of the police officers that was harassing me in one of these stores, and I told her on video, and it's the videos on my YouTube page, that I'm investigating these people that did this shit to me when I was a kid, and I am never going to give up until I find out who did it, or find out who's responsible for the thing. 3 weeks later, they arrested me for aggravated assault with a firearm. Never been arrested for anything like that in my life. Never had issues like that. I got in trouble driving when I was like 19. Other than that, I've got medals and awards from the Air Force.
I will tell you this. I'm a little bit more distrusting of cops, unfortunately, and I have the utmost respect for them. I really honest to do. But I'm a little more distrusting of them when the fact that I do watch a lot of these First Amendment audit videos. I binge watch them. James Freeman and Cop Watch, all of them. I don't know why, but I'm fascinated with all of them.
There's and a guy.
The things that you, I you see have, are
yeah,
disturbing.
Me too. They're awesome because these people prove that we can't use our First Amendment always. And there's actually a guy here in Maricopa. I think he's called Maricopa County Auditor or Arizona Auditor. I'll try to send you guys the link, but he does exactly what you're talking about. He went over to the Lockheed Martin facility over here recently. The day before I had to go to court, my school's my daughter's – God, I can't talk right now. My daughter's school went on lockdown because of an active shooter, and the story was – they caught a kid with a gun, and there were six more kids with a gun threatening to shoot up the school. I lost my track of mind there. There's just so much shit.
It's okay. We have to wrap up anyways.
You got a lot on your plate, man. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. Yeah. We really appreciate your willingness to talk and tell us your story.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, this is 1/1000th of what's going on. I mean, I could tell you guys more and more and more, but this is where people you know, that like to go down the rabbit holes should really start researching this. And, you know, people that are nonlinear thinkers like you guys, that don't just think black and white, you can be objective and look into things. You know, if you really start researching this and use your brain, you can figure it out. I think of it as the California State Insurance Exam. You can't pass that exam if you just try to go in there and try to answer yes or no to the questions. You have to understand the theory of how insurance works in order to work out the problems. And that's kind of how this is. So I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to be on the show, and I hope I answered all your questions, you know, best I could. And
we think rainbow. We think in rainbow here. We don't think in black and white. I think in rainbow. Steve doesn't think in colors at all because he doesn't believe they exist. So, there's that. And guys, thanks
again
like
a whole
to
talk Michael. Show, but I'll check that out.
Oh, it is. There's many episodes on it where we go back and forth. You can just look for it in the description. But we'll be back here tomorrow. If you are of the if I can't imagine that you are, but I've been wrong before. Let's say you think that, let's say you have a piece of paper. I'm going to paint you a pretty picture before we leave. You have this pretty piece of paper, right? And then you hold it over a flame. That paper turns brown and starts to die very quickly. And eventually the pieces fall down from the paper that you're burning. Now, what if I told you that is exactly what's happening when fall hits, that the planet is not getting colder, that you are under the impression that it's getting colder because it's an orchestrated event taking place by those with more power than us. Why? Because reptiles need constant heat year-round. And why are the leaves turning red and orange? Because hot climates. If you want to see more, join us tomorrow where we'll be joined by our founding liars and why autumn is a hoax. I'm not ready. Are you?
Good.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncorrelated.